Good morning, and thanks for joining us today on this Wednesday, November 5th. It's the day after voting day, and this is the morning show on 88.5 KRFY. This is listener-supported, commercial-free community radio for North Idaho, and I'm Susie Prez, and I'm here with my co-host this morning. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, I'm Chris Bessler. How are you doing, Susie?
Well, very well. I was up a little bit last night looking at what happened, so we're going to hear all about that today, and you're going to give us the rundown on that. And who's our guest?
And we have with us Ben Olson. He's a publisher of the Sandpoint Reader, and of course, the Reader's been covering election stuff. Ben, thanks for being here.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And we're going to break down a bunch of the stuff that happened last night, but let's rattle off the winners right off the top, just for folks that may not have heard the results yet. So the Lake Pendre School District continuing levy ballot measure passed with 42-56 in favor, 40-34 opposed. So it passed by a narrow margin. The Zone 4 school trustee winner was Geraldine Lewis over Tara Tribbett. And in the Sandpoint races, Shelby Ronstad bested Ken Lawrence and Shannon Williamson. The incumbent won there. In the Sandpoint Council, Kate McAllister, Deb Rule, and Andy Grote were the three winners, and they defeated Shannon Mitchell and Jackie Guinan. There were three seats open there. And in Pendre, there's an interesting couple of things going on there. For mayor, Steve Geiger won easily over Tara Tribbett. In the Pendre Council race, there's a tie. Brenda Thompson won with 102, but there are two seats up for election. There's a tie between the other two candidates, Brad Mitten and Gary Kunzman. They each received 83 votes. And that, we think, is going to go to a coin flip. And the Pendre 1% local option tax received 109 in favor to 72 opposed. That's a 60.2% margin among those who voted, which is just what they needed to get across the line there. They need a 60% majority to win. However, there's an interesting question there. There were 183 ballots cast, according to the county unofficial results. So that might mean there were two spoiled ballots, and I don't know how that affects this percentage for winning. So those are the results off the top. We're going to come back and talk about each of these races here a little bit later in the show.
But would you like to hear about the weather from the National Weather Service?
Yes.
That's always a good thing to do. Currently, it's 36 degrees out. There is a air stagnation advisory, and you can look that up at their website, the National Weather Service, until 12 p.m. Friday. So it's all through the week. Today, we can expect a high of 45 with patchy fog this morning, then sunny. Tonight, mostly clear, a low of 24. Thursday, high, mostly sunny, and the high of 48. And I did notice that on Friday, we have a high of 53 and sunshine. So kind of nice late fall weather.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, it is. It's the kind we like. And things going on around town, of course. There's always a ton of things going on here. There's a concert at the Hive. There's the annual BGH Hospice Rose event that's going on. There's the Sandpoint High School Grad Night Sippin' Shop at Pendre Winery. There's a Nordic Club season kickoff. The annual Warren Miller ski film is happening. We're not going to get into details on these, but to find out what's going on around our town, go to our website, krfy.org, or sandpointonline.com. Check out the calendar there for all the cool things happening in Sandpoint this weekend.
Sounds good. And before we get into the deep analysis of what happened in the elections last night locally, I have fresh off from the desk of Jennifer Stapleton, city administrator. We call this the Sandpoint City Minute. It's a bit long. It might be more than a minute, Chris, but here you go. The city will be hosting two community visioning events next Thursday, November 14th, in order to inform its update to the Sandpoint Comprehensive Plan. The first event on the 14th will be held at 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Sandpoint Airport. During this drop-in event, city staff and consultants from Logan Simpson will provide information about the Sandpoint Airport, its importance to our community, and vision for the future. The public has the opportunity to discuss ways to ensure the Sandpoint Airport's long-term vision is achieved. Kids are welcome. Please join the discussion, and there will be refreshments, and you can get a photo taken with a Cessna 172. Later that evening on November 14th from 5:30 to 7 p.m., the city is partnering with Forrest M. Byrd Charter School to hold a second broader discussion to identify and refine shared values and themes that will influence the future of Sandpoint. Again, snacks and refreshments will also be provided and children activities. And the third thing from the city of Sandpoint, the sidewalk workshop that was scheduled for the last council meeting that was postponed will happen tonight at the council meeting. Please join Mayor Ronstadt, the city council, and other community members for a discussion on proposed changes to the city's Sandpoint sidewalk code. The goal is to increase equity and fairness and improve overall clarity. Materials for this workshop are available under the City Council agenda posted on the city's website at sandpointidaho.gov. And that's it from the desk of Jennifer Stapleton. Thank you, Jennifer.
Okay, well, let's talk some more about the elections and what came down last night. The official vote, I think, the unofficial final tally, I think they
don't call it official until they
until they canvass it. Yeah, they look it over. Yeah,
but this is the last. This is all the numbers apparently.
This is usually all quite accurate. And they didn't finish counting till a little after 11 last night. So thanks to the county folks and all the volunteers, all the polls all around the county. We certainly appreciate the work you do. With that, let's talk about the Lake Pontchartrain School District continuing levy ballot, because that's the thing that most people could vote on. Every resident of the school district, which is the entire western two-thirds of Bonner County, was able to vote in that election. The ballot measure did pass with 4,256 in favor and 4,034 opposed. To rattle off a couple more numbers, there were a total of 8,333 ballots cast out of a total 19,608 registered voters. So in the school district, the voter turnout was 42.3%. And Ben, any observations there? I mean, that doesn't seem like a real high voter turnout for something that was getting an awful lot of press there for the month running up to this thing.
Yeah, that's kind of my first thought, too, is I figure that levy measures usually bring the people out no matter what year it is, if it's presidential, midterms, or, you know, these weird off odd year elections where we do municipal. That seemed to be a quite low number. And that was surprising to me because I thought that was going to be over 50. Like you see in the Sandpoint races, I thought it was going to be 50-60% turnout. And who knows if the number would have been different, because the in favors, they really only beat out the opposed by about 220 votes.
Yeah, it was very close. Yeah.
Yeah, 222 was the total winning number ahead.
So I worked it out, and the yays for that race came up with not quite 51.1 or 2%, I think. And the nays had like 48.4%. The interesting thing, the number of votes that were cast, was not the same as the number of ballots cast. So the yays and nays, just adding those up, it's actually 43 less than the ballots cast. So my presumption here is that there's always some ballots that are illegible, perhaps, or not properly marked or something. So there were 43. But that would not change the outcome of this race, no matter how those 43 ballots were cast, since there was a little over 200 vote margin on it.
I feel like that should be a reminder to people, you know, when they are voting, to make sure you fill in that little box all the way, because it is frustrating if you're not, because people think, oh, well, my vote doesn't count, because it does count. It obviously counts. It's quite important. It's also important to fill in the box all the way, you know?
Yeah, no question. I very carefully color in that box.
Me too.
And I'm not that good at coloring.
I know. I sat there and I thought, I'm at school again. We're just going to take a moment. Bonner County Sheriff just gave us an alert. The 16,000 block of Dufferin Road at Priest River is blocked due to a traffic accident. Please avoid the area. And so that's all you need to know in case you're going out that way.
Okay. Well, thanks for that, Sheriff's Department, keeping us apprised of those things. And back on the Lake Pend Oreille School District continuing levy ballot measure, looking at where people voted, it follows that classic pattern of the municipal area was had good margins in favor. The rural areas were generally opposed. The county has an interesting brand new interactive mapping feature now.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you checked that out, Ben.
I was scratching my head over it at first, and then I started to enjoy it a little bit when it broke down the actual, for county elections, it's great because you can see how the county votes one way or another.
Yeah. So what it does, we have, I think, 52 precincts in the county, and it breaks out how the vote goes in each precinct. And the mapping feature just shows you, by color, whether they're yay or nay. But if you take a look at the map, you can see that, like, Clark Fork area and the East Bonner County, Hope, that went in favor. And then Sandpoint and the downtown area itself went the most in favor. The area north of that, airport precinct, the Baldy precinct, they were in favor as well. But then the rest of the county, where it's more sparsely populated, were against the school levy. And that's kind of the classic pattern we see repeated all around the country in these mm-hmm. elections, where municipal people or city people tend to vote for the more progressive things and the outlying areas are more conservative. So
I thought it's interesting. I thought it was kind of a lukewarm opposition this time around. I've seen much more aggressive anti-levy rhetoric, and it seemed there it was there this time, but it seemed like it was quite a bit more watered down than the last levy vote that we took.
One of the things I noticed when we were at the forum and things like that is I would hear people say, well, I don't want to be more tax put on me, but this levy was not an increase or anything like that. It was just to stabilize things and continue the levy as is, or at the level that they said forever, basically,
right. Yep.
At this
right.
point in time. And so I wonder if that has something to do with it. It's not an increase and it wasn't a surprise. It just eliminates having to do a levy every 2 years.
Yeah, that created a pretty interesting dynamic. So it wasn't a new levy. It doesn't raise taxes. What it does, it continues the last levy that was approved back in March into the future and eliminates the need to have these votes every other year on the supplemental levy. And the levy, of course, now is not really supplemental anymore. It's become 35% of the school district's budget, and that's due to funding changes that happened about 15 years ago, back in 2006, by the legislature when they changed the funding formula. It's kind of complicated about how we arrived here, but at this point, 92 out of 115 school districts in Idaho rely on these levies now to make up their budgets. Because of the way the funding formula works. So this was different. It wasn't approving a new levy. It was saying, let's just keep going with the levy we've already approved. But the interesting thing is, the levy in March was approved by a 56% margin. This one was approved by a little over 51% margin. And I think that the calculus here would be that folks that opposed the levy in March, obviously we're going to oppose this because mm-hmm. it would continue it. But there was about 5% of the voters that decided, well, you know what, I guess I want to vote every 2 years on this.
Sure.
Thing. Yeah.
And that makes sense. I guess it was the difference between, if you get an allowance from your dad, $10 a week, you either ask for it every week or you just, receive it every week. It's like, do you want to ask for it? Do you want to keep asking for it? And maybe you can get more next time. Maybe dad will be flush and he'll help you out. But, I think that it did scare away a lot of the idea of a permanent levy did scare away a lot of people, which is why you probably saw that lower margin of win. So, it's an interesting vote. And I think overall, this county, they are quite supportive of levies as far as the ballot box goes. But you can see this number rising. And it's, you know, it's not going down, the people that oppose levies. So I think maybe the school district made a wise move trying to stabilize this levy.
Yes. And if that's what they're going for, that's definitely the case. And, you know, we should point out that the levy has been in place for 20 years, and it's passed at every single election during that period in time. So the one effect of this is we don't have to incur the expense and all the hoopla about around an election every 2 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess if there's any silver lining for conservative folks that oppose it, it's that it does lock this levy in amount. It can't be increased without another vote. And the school district and the trustees are probably keenly aware that they need to make these funds last for, you know, at least maybe longer than 2 years before they come back with any kind of idea of asking for more money. So conservative folks that were opposed to it, maybe that's a silver lining for you. We'll mention one more thing that came up very last minute in this election. It didn't actually break until Monday night. There was a story going around that school levies, that this levy and another levy down south that was being voted on yesterday, quote, appear to violate state election law. And that was reported in a website called the Idaho Ed News. We haven't, there's a law that was passed 2 years ago, apparently, by that whole legislature that requires districts to include a estimated breakdown of a measure's cost per $100,000 of taxable assessed property value. And it's supposed to be in the language on a ballot measure. Our ballot measure didn't have that. And this is a brand new law. And we don't even know if it applies to this particular case because this wasn't voting on a levy. This was a ballot measure to continue an already approved levy. So there's a lot of questions there about that. And I can guess that Sandpoint Reader might inform us a little bit more when it comes out tomorrow.
Yeah, we've got that on our list. Probably not going to get to it this week, but we've got that on our list for a follow-up story.
Yeah. It kind of blew up in social media yesterday. And of course, with the amount of misinformation and disinformation that circulates that way, I'd say, well, let's just wait and see. There was a one comment from a deputy secretary of state saying he's reviewed stuff and that missing language does not automatically invalidate election results. So no matter how this thing shakes out, for the moment, we have an approved levy. With that, let's talk also about the one trustee seat that was contested. It was Zone 4, and that was Geraldine Lewis, opposed by Tara Tribbett for the trustee position there. Geraldine Lewis is the incumbent. She received 1,088 votes to 339 votes for Tara Tribbett. Been any? We had both those folks at the candidates forum.
We did, yeah. And Geraldine Lewis, you know, she's a fairly well-known figure in the community, and she there was kind of no surprises here. Tara Tribbett definitely came from out in center field, and she put a strong showing on at the forum. She was very spirited, and I think a lot of people probably voted for her just based on her general, spirits, let's say. But a lot of her ideas were interesting. You know, she was, at one point she said that she didn't believe there needed to even be an administrator and that it could be student run, school district, which, you know, these are interesting ideas. And it's something that you see in politics a lot today where people campaign on what they can break down and what they oppose, but not necessarily how they would fix it. And so I think Tara's main flaw was that she had a lot of things that she wanted to tear down, but she actually didn't quite have any plans for how to build it back up. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody can, you know, poo-poo on an idea here and there, but it takes, you know, somebody with a little vision to actually say, well, and then this is how I propose we move forward from here. And she did have ideas, but I don't think a lot of them were quite actualized yet.
Yeah, one thing she was really speaking up for at the forum, of course, was more the income inequality that she feels exists, and the fact that a lot of people in Pondere and this zone, you know, are struggling to make ends meet, and there needs to be consideration of that. I'm not sure how that related into the school district trustee race and the kind of decision that trustees make, because, you know, the budget is only part of it. There's a lot of other things involved. But she was, as you said, very spirited there. I will say one thing is she didn't campaign anywhere else.
We didn't have any responses to our questionnaire. The last, you know, 11th hour, I called a number that I got from the Bonner County Elections Office and left a message and invited her to the forum because I hadn't heard from her on that. And, you know, it's just, to me, it's like, why are you going to run for office if you're not going to actually do the bare minimum of campaigning? And perhaps she could have doubled her vote if she would have actually participated.
Yeah. I think she could have if she would have reached out more. She turned down the invitation to come on the morning show when we covered that race here. And she also didn't answer any questionnaires on Sandpoint Online or the Daily Bee, I believe. So she didn't participate in that way. But she did show up and speak forcefully there at the forum.
Yep.
So with that, let's turn to the Sandpoint races, where again, Shelby Ronstadt, the incumbent, won for mayor, and the three council winners were Keith McAllister, Deb Rule, and Andy Grote. Let's break down the mayor race a little bit here. So Shelby, the incumbent, received 1,234 votes. Ken Lawrence received 771 votes, and Shannon Williamson received 498 votes. Those three all did campaign quite heartily, I think.
It was actually one of the more heated campaigns right in the last minute, you know, the last week, pretty much.
the fabled October surprise dropped.
you see a lot of, I don't want to use the term dirty politics because there wasn't a whole lot of dirty politics here, but, you know, there were a few things that happened that it was interesting at the last minute, where we were, as an editorial decision, we were deciding, are we going to release a story on election day? And we decided, no, I mean, we don't want to affect elections. We just want to share information. And as a weekly, it's tough for us. And so we held back on a couple of stories we were working on that could have added to the noise, but we didn't, you know, at the Reader. We try to keep an even keel when it comes to elections. But there was a lot of stuff that happened in this mayoral race that was quite interesting in the end. You know, Shannon Williamson was always kind of viewed as it's a tough position to go against an incumbent as it is. Many of her views are echoed by a lot of Ronstadt's views as far as ideology, and so it was always a tough race for her. But she took nearly 500 votes that probably would have gone to Shelby, and that was the quote unquote splitting the vote that a lot of folks were talking about. And I think that, you know, when you look at these numbers, she placed third, but I don't know that a lot of these, I think a lot of these folks probably would have voted for Shannon if Shelby hadn't have been running. So, you know, it's hard to look at that and say, oh, she took a drubbing. I think Ken Lawrence's 771 votes is another thing that Sandpoint residents should look at closely. Because that's quite a few. That's within 500 votes or within 400 and, you know, some votes of Shelby, and that's not nothing, as they say.
Just doing the math here. So Ken Lawrence, who was the conservative candidate, I'd say if you're going to break it down into ideologies, this is a nonpartisan race. It's not a Democrat Republican thing, but he was clearly advocating conservative principles there, and he. With 771 votes out of 2,503 votes cast, again, that's different than ballots cast. That was votes cast in this race. He received 30.8% of the vote. So the two more progressive candidates between them had 69% of the vote. Shelby, with his 1,231, got the lion's share of that with little over 49% of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of the pattern we're seeing where in the city itself, the progressive folks are outnumbering the conservatives.
And I wouldn't put it past anything that some votes that may have gone to Ken Lawrence, if it was just a two-person race, may have gone to Shannon. Because even at the forum, she did align herself or agreed with some of the things Ken was saying and said, I can understand that. But, you know, Shannon is on the city council. She's the president of the city council. She knows the city quite well and had a lot of passion and was very articulate about why she was running. So it was a close race in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean, if you add Ken Lawrence and Shannon Williamson's votes, it comes up to 1,269, which is just over what Shelby's votes were. And, you know, it's hard to look back, but, you know, at hypotheticals, but that would have been a really tight race if it was just Shannon and Shelby. If presumably all the Ken Lawrence votes went one way or another.
Yeah.
So,
and I'm sure there's a calculation by many voters that, hey, I like Shannon, but I'm afraid of splitting the vote. You know, wanting to keep a more progressive figure in that seat. And I'm going to vote with Shelby because he's the incumbent and he has more momentum here and more likely to prevail.
Well, and a lot of folks thought that, you know, Shannon stays on the council another 2 years. So they thought this is kind of the best of both worlds. Keep Shannon on the council where she's doing a very good job. She's been president the last 4 years, I believe. Keep Shelby in the mayor's office. And I think that was a good contingency for a lot of voters.
Yeah, that's part of the calculus, I'm sure of it.
Yep.
I even saw things on Facebook that said exactly what you said, Chris. Let's not split the vote. Let's keep Shannon in the council because she's doing a great job and, and keep Shelby as incumbent mayor for the next 4 years. Mm-hmm. So there was a campaign with that thought in mind.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I got to say, Ken Lawrence was a good campaigner and he was very civil, and the discourse that we had in this race, aside from the shenanigans there in between those two other candidates, but the discourse and the airing of the ideas between them was healthy for the town.
Yeah, you know, Ken Lawrence, he's a nice guy, and I think a lot of folks viewed him as a safe bet, which is why he had over almost 800 votes. I think that it is tough for a lot of folks. You know, he's an older gentleman. He's a retired pastor, really nice guy. I think it's a lot of folks in Sandpoint viewed that as, well, we have a vision for who the mayor of Sandpoint should be. And maybe a lot of folks wanted, a little bit younger personality in there, a mover and a shaker. It all comes down to preference, really. And I think Ken Lawrence should be proud of the campaign that he ran, almost 800 votes. That's quite impressive.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the Sandpoint Council. Again, our winners there, the three winners were Kate McAllister, getting the biggest share of votes with 1644. Deb Rule, the incumbent, got 1418. And Andy Grote, newcomer to the scene, he received 1257. And those were all pretty good margins, considering that the vote was split five ways. The other two candidates who did not prevail were Shannon Mitchell. She received 960. And Jackie Guinan, she received 801 votes. And so, Ben, what are any observations on that race?
Yeah, I think it kind of turned out. I mean, this was my prediction exactly. It turned out according to what a lot of folks thought. There was, Jackie Guinan's candidacy, there was another one of those October surprise stories when, there was actually a resident who filed a police complaint based on, some Facebook chatter, some other issues, where it seemed to point to Jackie Guinan as being a Pend Oreille resident running for office in Sandpoint. We actually, Zach Hagedon, the reader editor, he spent a lot of time on that story, and it's just
trying to dig out the facts.
Perfect example of Facebook is running a mile a minute, tripping over its shoelaces, face planting, but keeps getting up and keeps running. But journalists don't pay attention to that. They are the tortoise that just keeps plodding ahead and finds the truth of the story. And the truth of the matter was she absolutely had a right to run in this election. The Sandpoint police did a thorough investigation, talked to her neighbors, you know, looked at all the paperwork. She had a right to run in this election. And I think I thought that would have helped her chances a little bit just because of a sympathy vote, because it is frustrating when you have a lawful right to run for an election to be, I don't want to use the word persecuted, but to be held up against the wall for for no reason. And so that to me was a little troubling, but we did get to the bottom of it. And I hope that most people that did vote had that information, which is, you know, I don't want to ever knock absentee voting, but there are some things that come up in the last 2-3 weeks of an election season that sometimes you turn in your vote and you go, ooh. And so, you know, maybe somebody might have heard a rumor early on, an absentee, turn in their absentee ballot, and then this, you know, this story about her residency turned out to be false, and she was a Sandpoint resident. So, you know, that's just one of those cases why I always vote on election day. I prefer it, actually. But yeah, to get back to the race, I think McAllister taking the lion's share of the votes, I think that was no surprise. She's super well-liked in Sandpoint. She's heavily involved with the community.
She's the president of the Chamber of Commerce, so she certainly knows a ton of people in town.
She's
an actress.
An actress. She's been in several of my plays. And she's just, aside from all that, she's actually just a really fun, fun-loving woman who listens to all the sides of an argument, and she's quite fair, and I appreciate that about her. And she has spirit, and she has fire, and I think that's always fun to have, is somebody who will say what's on their mind, while also being respectful.
She's also really smart.
Yes.
And so taking on this role in city council was not, she thought about it quite a bit, and she wants to serve in this way, so we appreciate that. I wanted to just go back for a moment to the Jackie question about her citizenship.
Residency.
Yep. Sorry. One of the things that kept coming to mind is if you were to hear something and it had some credibility, somehow you felt it was credible, could there have been a different avenue to investigate that rather than the big public avenue the citizen went down?
Yeah, public records requests and talking to your local newspaper or call the elections office. And I think a lot of those things were done and they were in the works, but I think a few folks got ahead of that and they thought they would, you know, they would get fired up. And I saw a few emails sent out to a lot of people, you know, calling for an emergency, urgent reaction needed. And I thought, you know what, this is not helping anything because, you know, you got to let these things play out. And so I was frustrated during that race because I don't like unfairness. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was quite unfair.
I think the issue here is, you know, it raises a legitimate question. If a person's not a resident of the district they're running for election in, is legitimate.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But by posting the question up on Facebook, then it gets picked up in, you know, the local forums and the different media places where they post that. It gets carried along. It's a rumor. It's not substantial. And the person that is making that post, instead of posting your question in that kind of inflammatory way, if you would back up and use some of the avenues you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Check it out first and investigate and see if there's anything to it. And then if there is something to it, you have actually some basis to make that kind of claim. But it's kind of the a good example of the pervasive influence we see from social media and how it's kind of polluting things by injecting misinformation so often.
Just Absolutely. An idea comes forward and it goes viral. And when you think of the word viral, it's a virus. It can be damaging. So anyways, I'm glad that was resolved. And sorry.
Yeah, I think it's important for folks to know, you know, it's no secret how I feel about Facebook. I think it's a cesspool in many ways. There are good people that use Facebook for good reasons, but I think you know, Mark Zuckerberg calling Facebook the fifth estate last week in a congressional hearing. I almost lost my lunch when that happened. You know, this after them saying that they would allow politicians to lie in ads. I don't believe everything you read on Facebook, folks. That's, well, that's was, common sense, but yeah. It's simple. Don't believe it.
It was a tool of the Russians in the last election. I mean, our intelligence agencies are very clear on that, and they have a ton of data to support it, that the Russians actually hired people to spread disinformation in our elections, and it can be used by as a tool by foreign actors, but misuse by just the local citizens too is pretty rampant as well. Yeah. So
Be smart and make sure you source your arguments. You know, that's all I have to say.
I have a feeling that we could have a whole morning show on this whole subject. I think it would be a good one.
Of the Facebook. Yeah, but let's get back to the council race.
So don't get me started.
We talked about Kate McAllister. The second largest vote getter and winner was Deb Ruhle. She's the incumbent. And I'd say with Deb, when she spoke at the forums and she, you know, answered the questionnaires and so on for this, she really demonstrated she has a command of all the issues that are going on.
Yeah, Deb is, you know, she's pretty middle of the road as far as, you know, controversy. Nobody has anything bad to say about Deb. She's really good at what she does. She was appointed first, and then she ran unopposed in the last. So she came in to see us for a minute, and she's like, "This is the first election I've actually had to run." And you know, and it's always nervous running for office, but I think that her being an incumbent and having a voting record and having a pretty clear headed view of Sandpoint issues, that earned her seat for sure. Mm-hmm. And then Andy Grote, vote for Grote.
He's got a name made for something.
I was wondering who was going to be the third seat. I knew that McAllister and Ruhle would probably take the two top votes, but I was wondering if it was going to be Grote, Mitchell, or Guinan. And I think this is a perfect example of some people vote for a guy or a woman, a candidate, just based on curiosity. And that's kind of Grote's campaign was, you know, I'm curious. I want to be involved. He's a super nice guy. Most everybody knows him from his UPS driver job. He's just a really nice guy. He's always got something positive to say. And that really resonates with folks. You know, he'll learn as he goes is kind of the way that people voted for him said, well, you know, I think he will. I think he's going to be a good guy on the council. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's, you know, he's a pretty good speaker too, and he seemed to be fairly middle of the road on things. So I think the fact that he is really well known in a small town with this many votes, that can make a big difference. Shannon Mitchell was a very viable candidate as well, and she was kind of a moderating influence, it felt like. And I think she probably collected votes from both conservative folks and from more progressive folks. She was kind of in the middle there.
I think a lot of folks had no clue where she lied on the political spectrum, and that may have helped her and it may have hurt her. I saw signs of hers with a lot of the progressive candidates, and I also saw signs of hers with the more conservative candidates. And so I was confused myself. She struck me as somebody who's kind of a centrist, you know, a moderate person. And I don't know if that's correct or not, but I think a lot of the folks that voted for her understood that, you know, she does work at the county. She's got a good relationship with the county. So maybe that would have been a boon to have somebody at the county that knows operations that can kind of bridge a little bit of the gap. That's probably why she got some of her votes. She seemed like a capable woman, and I think that she's, you know, she got almost 1,000 votes. That's, as I said, that's not nothing.
Yeah. And then the fifth place finisher was Jackie Guinan. She received 801 votes. One thing that's interesting to me, she was the conservative candidate, and she was, you know, she wanted to put herself out there as a conservative choice. But she actually got more votes than Ken Lawrence did. Ken Lawrence in the mayor's race, who was the other clear conservative choice, he received 771. So he received slightly fewer votes than Jackie did. And I'm not sure what that indicates.
I have a hunch that a few Ken Lawrence voters were trying to view the wind and see, well, maybe if I voted for Shannon, there's a better, because they're more voting because maybe they don't like Shelby. So I think a few of those votes probably were Shannon votes, you know, as opposition to Shelby. That's my guess. Because I saw that too, and I thought that was curious.
Yeah.
You think they would vote roughly along the same lines.
Yeah.
And with that, do we want to take a short shall we roll it here? We want to talk about Pondere, and then there are four other city races that we're not too up to speed on the candidates in those, but in Priest River, Dover, East Hope, and Kootenai, they all had some contested races in them, and we can at least tell you who won those.
Let's keep going.
Let's roll it. Okay. So, Pondere, this is in many ways the most interesting things came out of Pondere. For one thing, in the council race with two seats up for election, we have a tie. Brenda Thompson won with 102 votes, but the other two candidates that were running for election, Brad Mitten and Gary Kunstman, each received 83 votes. And I got to imagine that the guys that were counting votes counted those over and over again to be sure that they got a tie there. And what we have dug up from the Idaho Code is a section that does say, in the case of a tie, it's a flip of the coin to determine the winner. And I know they did that in a few elections ago. Somewhere
in the east, I thought, wasn't it?
Well, it was actually just down in Idaho.
Oh, in Idaho.
Yeah. I can't remember the name of the town right now, but there was an Idaho town. It was a very small town like this. There weren't very many votes, and they flipped a coin. So I think it's going to come down to a coin flip here.
Which is, you know, for all of you folks out there that say, oh, my vote doesn't matter, right? What's one vote? Well, we're coin flipping a candidate into office right now because one vote does matter,
that's
folks.
Right.
Especially if you live in Pondere.
Yeah. And let's say this, too. Pondere has 471 registered voters. There were only 183 ballots cast. So that's the lowest turnout rate. And we didn't mention this for Sandpoint, but in Sandpoint, there were 2,562 ballots cast out of 4,492 registered voters. Turnout there was 57%. Still, I wouldn't consider that too great, considering there was a mayor and three council seats up for election. So there's apathy there. But in Pondere, with just 183 people casting ballots, the voter turnout there was 38.9%, and they had some really important things on the ballot as well. That Pondere Council, as we mentioned, where we ended up with a tie between Brad Mitten and Gary Kunstman, but also the Pondere mayor race, although it was not close, actually. Steve Geiger received 137 votes. Tara Tribbett received 35. And here again, Tara, who's the same Tara that ran for the Zone 4 trustee, school trustee seat, really didn't do anything except come to the forum and talk there. She didn't do any kind of campaigning that we could perceive.
She did say she wanted to implode the city government if she got elected. And I think
that's right.
That really energizes some people, and I think that really turns a lot of folks off.
Yeah. At the forum, she kind of started out warm on the trustee race, but then she heated up for the mayor race. And yeah, she was saying she wants to break up and cause some disruptions in Pondere, and I guess that position didn't work out.
But nonetheless, she was enthusiastic about that imploding idea.
Yes, she had enthusiasm.
She did. She did. Yeah, she spoke really, really forcefully.
Yeah, I mean, she's a smart person. She said she had a degree in journalism. I've talked to her before on several stories, usually education related, where she'll call in with a tip or something else. And so she's not an ignorant person by any means, but it's an example of sometimes the further left you go, it almost wraps around, and that's kind of what happened here. And a lot of her ideas were out there quite a bit.
Yeah. And again, she was really, trying to stick up for the folks that are low income, and she was income inequality that was a big issue for her. Although I didn't hear any ideas from her on how she would address that, especially in a small town like Ponderé. And Steve Geiger at the forum, his comeback was, "I'm proud of Ponderé, and I'm proud of all the jobs we create there." He cited, I think, 3,000 jobs in Ponderé, which is pretty amazing.
That's amazing. You know?
That's three times the population of the town, and that's because they have those big commercial centers, the Walmart and Home Depot, that employ a lot of people, along with some industry as well. And then the other very interesting thing out of Ponderé was the 1% local option tax proposal that was on the ballot. And it received 109 votes in favor to 72 opposed. If you do the math, that's a total of 181 votes that were either yay or nay. And that gives us a 60.2% approval, which just gets over the threshold of a 60% approval that's required by the state for a local option tax to pass. Now, the interesting thing is, if you look at the county records on this, the unofficial results, they list 183 ballots cast, which we're surmising means that two ballots were invalid for one reason or other. They didn't fill in the box or whatever. And if the yeas required to pass with 183 ballots cast, it'd be 59.5%. So
yeah, it's one of those situations where it's like, woof.
It's another place where that one vote makes a difference,
Or you could toss a coin. Probably not. We'll hear about it.
If I can continue on that, okay. I have a note. I called into Eric Brubaker, the city planner, on this question this morning to ask what he might know about it. And he actually hadn't seen the number of the ballots cast number. He's of course, marking that 60.2% majority. He did send me the Idaho code section that relates to this. And just to read from that, it says, quote, a 60% majority of the voters of any resort city voting on the question may approve, and upon approval, any city may adopt the local option non-property taxes. So this is actually this is not a property tax. This is a 1% sales tax on sales of up to $1,000 in any one ticket in Ponderé. What it's going to do, it's going to raise a ton of money for Ponderé from the people that shop at Walmart and Home Depot. There are millions of dollars worth of sales that go there. Ponderé gets back less than $130,000 in sales tax revenue out of many millions that are collected. And this is actually going to provide them a bigger piece of that. We'll have to wait and see. You know, it's just projections on how much money this will actually raise, but it could be a couple million dollars a year. Big game changer for the city of Ponderé. So it's obviously important to the city folks that it would pass. And if you read the Idaho Code on this, I mean, just taking this language, it's the majority of the resort city voting on the question may approve. So I don't know if that makes it clear, but at this point, it's we're considering it a past proposal. And I'm sure the Sandpoint Reader will dig into this question and let us know in tomorrow's paper.
We're curious about the ballots cast versus the actual number of votes counted, what these discrepancies are. I'm sure that they're just not filled in all the way, or somebody put a check mark instead of filling in the box. It's important to follow directions, folks.
Yeah, when you're voting. Not just vote, but vote carefully.
Yes.
So, and this is another place where one vote makes a huge difference. So, yeah, if you're ever thinking your vote doesn't count, it can come down to it.
One thing I kept hearing about the local option tax in Ponderé from folks that live there is saying, well, I live there, so I'm going to get taxed. And that was really a misnomer. And it's really coming from the shoppers who shop there in those big stores. And Chris, can you just go over what this local option tax will be covering? Or maybe you did. I wasn't listening.
It's a 1% tax, sales tax on purchases up to $1,000. So it's not going to affect somebody that's making a big ticket purchase at Sandport Furniture or buying a car. Tax won't apply to them. But if you're buying $100 worth of stuff at Walmart, it's that 1% is going to add $1 to your purchase. And the money is dedicated for some specific projects. One of them is to build an underpass that will give Pendre residents access to Lake Pendre and the Pendre Bay Trail. And then the other big ticket item that the money would be dedicated to is improving the Field of Dreams, which has been a project kind of in development and sitting there waiting for wonderful things to happen for 20 years. So this will give the city some money to do some stuff with that as well. And we are going to run out of time here pretty soon. I want to run through one more time in case you're just tuning in who the winners are in these races. And then I'm going to mention winners in some of the other contested races around the city races around the county. So in Sandpoint and Pendre, the incumbent mayors there both held their seats last night. In Sandpoint, Shelby Ronstadt won. And for the Sandpoint Council, the winners were Kate McAllister, Deb Rule, and Andy Grote. In Pendre, the incumbent mayor, Steve Geiger, won. And as we just mentioned, Brenda Thompson won one of the two seats up for election. And there's a tie between Brad Mitten and Gary Kunzman that we think is going to come down to a coin toss to settle that. In the Lake Pendre School District, the continuing levy ballot measure passed with 4,256 in favor and 4,034 opposed. And in Lake Pendre School District Zone 4, Geraldine Lewis won for trustee. And as we just mentioned, of course, the 1% Pendre local option tax proposal passed, if we do the math, strictly based on the yeas and the nays.
And I just think it's amazing that people choose to run in a small town, North Idaho election like this. So I just want to give a shout out and say thank you to everyone who took up the torch and said, I'm going to run for a seat in a local election, whether you won or not. And congratulations, of course, to the winners, but a thank you to those that took it up.
Yeah, it's always tough to put yourself out there. I think that local elections like this is as close as we get to the government this is as close as we get to government is what I'm trying to say. These local elections, all the way from the president of the United States down to the local councilman in your city. That's a huge hierarchy, but it's all part of the same democracy. And I think that for folks to participate in these municipal elections, my hat's off to all of them, the winners and the losers. The voters decided, and let's move forward and go from there.
And we have just enough time to mention the winners of the four cities that had contested races last night. In Dover, the candidate for mayor, Mike Davis, is the winner. He got 196 votes to Frida King's 47 votes. There was a contested race in the city of East Hope for city council. There were three candidates going for two seats. And we had a tie there, folks.
Get out the coin.
Actually, it won't take a coin this time because Ian Barrett received 48 votes. Deborah Field received 48 votes. And Phil Kranz received 30. So they're not going to need to go to the coin flip there. The two bigger vote getters, even though they tied, they're going to hold those two seats. And let me find in Kootenay, there was a contested race for council. There was one seat and three candidates. And the winner in Kootenay was Margaret Majeldi, and I'm sure that I'm pronouncing that incorrectly. She received 69 votes. Brian Black received 41, and Fabiola Ferris received 25. And there was only one seat available there. So Margaret is going to be the council person there. And finally, in Priest River, let me get it there real quickly. There were four candidates for two seats. And the winners there were Greg Edwards and Douglas Wagner. Greg received 112. Douglas Wagner received 83. Sean Schneider. Snyder received 70, and William Michael Mullally received 40. And I'm sure I'm butchering everybody's.
And guess what, Chris? We're out of time, and we want to thank Ben Olson. Thanks so much. It's kind of become a habit here after election to see your smiling face for the reanalysis of what happened.
Happy to be here.
And I want to mention that next week we're going to have Reclaim Idaho's Executive Director Rebecca Schroeder in to talk about Reclaim Idaho's new ballot petition campaign, and that will be very interesting, I'm sure. We're going to remind you that you can go to our website to hear a podcast of this today's interview at krfy.org. And thanks, Chris. That was great analysis of what happened on this November election this year. So thank you.
We can all take a deep breath and relax a little bit now.
Yeah, do something
else. It's over.
It's over. And we're going to go out with a song that I heard this morning on Easy Wednesday morning, Easy on a Wednesday morning, that Bernie Mosier, our host, picked. It's just a great song. It's called We All Need More Kindness in This World. It's just a great old song. So have a great day, folks. Enjoy the song.
Bye now.
See ya.